to a Hope 103.2 podcast.
Clio magazine once had a list of what's in, what's out for the coming year. I was interested to see that number three for the most out-of-fashion things in modern Australia was guilt. The editors then added that guilt was a most unnecessary feeling. Now, it has to be said that some people do live with unnecessary guilt. They are just wired with an oversensitive conscience. But for most of us, guilt is anything but unnecessary. It's, in fact, a powerful psychological reminder that we are moral beings. We're creatures designed to live a certain way, and to refuse that way is to be less than fully human. There's a trend in our society, it seems to me, to minimise the notion of right and wrong, good and evil, innocent and guilty. For a lot of people, then, morality is like bad fashion. You wouldn't be seen dead wearing it. And anyone who stands up for what they believe is morally right is blasted as arrogant. And if anyone speaks against something, calling it wrong, we say they're judgmental, or worse, old-fashioned. So maybe Clio magazine is right when it declared that guilt is an outdated, unnecessary feeling. And yet, most people I talk with do have this gut feeling about what is right and wrong. Most of us still have a hunch that there are real limits to how far we should go. Despite Clio, many of us do know guilt from time to time. Regardless of how much the media sells the idea that we're free to do what we like any old time, the average person on the street seems to instinctively know otherwise. Some of us may get sucked into acting like there's no right and no wrong, but very few of us actually believe it in our heart of hearts. I've mentioned before that I once asked a group of Year 10 students to imagine their life, everything they'd done, said and thought, on film, in full Technicolor and surround sound. I asked them what rating their film would get. Some of the young blokes yelled out, "Oh, rated R and rated X." Now, then I added, imagine if all of your friends and family were invited to watch this film of your thoughts, words, and deeds. A few of them started to squirm in their seats. I then said, imagine if God could see your life's film, everything you've done, said, and thought, and decided to evaluate your life on that basis. A young guy sitting toward the back muttered to himself, "I'd be gone." I don't know anyone who'd want their actions, words, or thoughts shown to others, let alone to God himself, the Creator. I suspect the editors of Clio may even begin to believe in guilt if they knew their films were going to get a showing before the Almighty himself. The reality is, despite all the noises to the contrary, we are moral beings. We are all wired to know the difference between right and wrong, even though our wiring gets a little crossed from time to time. I know mine does. It's impossible to talk about right and wrong without mentioning rules. But the problem is, rules are one of the things people like least about religion. I wish I had a dollar for every time a person I've spoken with said something like, "Yeah, Jesus I like, but I can't stand all those Christian rules." Now, this may come as a surprise, but I've got to say, I love God's rules. I think they're one of the best aspects of being a Christian. God's rules are like a lot of the rules of your favourite sport. They're not there to ruin the game, but to make the most of the game. Rules in sport are what give each game its character. They protect players from unnecessary injury, and they enhance the player's performance. For instance, I'm glad, personally, that rugby union has an unlimited tackle rule. In my opinion, that's what makes union a more flowing game to play and watch than league. Now, I know some people are going to disagree with me at that point, but anyway. I'm glad that league has a no-head-high tackle rule. It's this rule that keeps these giants from breaking their necks more often than they already do. Then there's soccer, my favourite game. The offside rule in soccer actually enhances the play of both team and individual. It means instead of just belting the ball from one end of the pitch to the other, the team has to move the ball strategically up through the midfield, then onto the strikers and into the back of the net. God's rules about life are just the same, but better. God's commandments are about the best life possible. They're there to give life its dynamic character. They're there to protect us from getting unnecessarily hurt. And they certainly enhance our performance as players in God's world. Take God's rules about sex, for example. As I said last week, God's commandments about sexuality are there to protect us from the shallow experience offered by the world's sexperts. Those rules are there to give us sexual enjoyment in the context of lifelong trust and companionship. Or take God's rules about beauty and image, which I also talked about last week. God insists that we mustn't get caught up in the obsession to look beautiful. He says this not because he's against beauty. I mean, he's the creator after all. He says it because he wants to protect us from the narrow perspective on life that often results from being preoccupied with image. God's rules are fantastic. And because of this, it's actually appropriate that we feel guilt when we go against God's wishes. Guilt is not an unnecessary feeling at all. It's often a very good reminder that there is a better way to act. More importantly, it's a good reminder that we should also ask our Creator for His forgiveness. Our defiance of God's wishes is unacceptable, and the reality is He does see everything, just like it was in a film. But the great news of the Christian faith is this: because of Jesus' life, death, and resurrection, God will forgive those who admit their unworthiness and guilt before Him. Put another way, despite the awful bits in the films of our lives, God is willing to accept us and even direct a new film for us.
Hope 103.2. Thanks for listening.